Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to another episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewired.News podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that is just sick of Donald Trump. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just sick of the man. I don't like him. He's not my Jewish messiah. He's frankly a pain in the ass. I'm Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclow. Rewired.News is dedicated to bringing you the best reproductive rights and social justice news, commentary, and analysis on the web. And the Team Legal podcast is part of that mission. So a big thanks to our subscribers and a welcome to our new listeners.
If there's one thing that anti-choicers love, it's attacking Planned Parenthood.
Definitely.
Whether it's fake claims that Planned Parenthood was founded by a woman whose sole goal in life was to exterminate the black population through abortion, or claims that Planned Parenthood was in the nefarious business of selling baby heads on the black market for pennies on the dollar, anti-choicers seem to have a never-ending stream of lies and attacks when it comes to Planned Parenthood.
They really do. And earlier this week, all of the Planned Parenthood haters creamed their collective Twinkie, Imani, as the reproductive healthcare provider announced that it would be withdrawing from the federal family planning program known as Title 10 because of Trump's domestic gag rule.
But wait a minute. You said I couldn't say anything about cream Twinkies anymore because you said it was gross.
It is. I know. But these are wild times, Imani, and a girl's allowed to change her mind.
Fair enough. But that's exactly what happened. Anti-choicers could barely contain their excitement. But as they were gloating, thinking that they had finally taken down big abortion, what they were really gloating about is poor people being unable to access healthcare.
Yep.
Because that's what conditioning Title 10 funding on a promise not to perform, speak about, make a referral for, or even have a whisper of a fleeting thought about abortion. That's what it does. It makes it difficult, and in some cases, impossible, for poor people who rely on Planned Parenthood to access reproductive health care.
This is a big deal. We're not going to sugarcoat this. It's fucking terrible. And what's even more terrible is that providers are going to have a really hard time winning this case at the Supreme Court, Imani. You know why?
Yeah, just tell us. Just lay it on me.
Because the government attorney who so successfully argued in favor of a similar domestic gag rule during the Reagan administration, that guy, he's sitting on the Supreme Court right now. Do you know who that guy is?
I do, because we've been talking about this.
I've been yammering about him all week.
You've been yammering about him all week, and frankly, you're a little bit obsessed with this dude lately.
So. It's John Roberts! John Roberts is to blame!
John frickin' Roberts! Oh, God, John Roberts. Why?
Yeah, we're going to tell you why. In this episode, we're going to tell you all about Trump's attacks on the federal family planning program known as Title 10, the domestic gag rule, and how John Roberts will probably and happily let the Trump administration screw over poor people.
We're also going to tell you about how this gag rule is really about a war on contraception.
Yep.
And then we're probably going to silent scream some more because that's just what you have to do in Donald Trump's America. So Jess, where do we begin? Let's dig into this a bit.
All right, let's give some background here. In May 2018, the Trump administration announced new restrictions related to the Title 10 Family Planning Program. That's the federal program that guarantees access to reproductive health care for Medicaid recipients. So those restrictions include the domestic gag rule, and this gag rule bans federal dollars from going to providers who perform abortions or refer for abortion services. The restrictions also mandate these new physical and financial separation requirements between a Title 10 funded program and a facility that engages in quote unquote abortion activities.
These physical and financial separation restrictions are downright ridiculous.
They're bonkers.
They're just so absurd. So the separation must include separate waiting rooms, separate consultation rooms, separate examination rooms, and separate treatment. God damn it.
Tweetment.
What is with me and the word treatment? And separate treatment rooms, as well as office entrances and exits. Title X grantees would have to provide different phone numbers and email addresses for those staff members and facilities involved in abortion services.
That's just bizarre.
It's bonkers.
Like, you'd get three different emails for one job.
Right, right. And like we don't have enough problems with emails. And I have like 25,000 emails that are unread. Like, I don't need 3,000 email accounts. My God.
Listener, she's slow on the email. This would be terrible for
really, really slow on the email. If you want to find me, just DM me on Twitter, for Christ's sake. But these separation requirements apply to all Title X funded projects that give referrals to patients who want to obtain an abortion, as well as any that engage in separately funded advocacy or public education activities that, quote, promote abortion, as determined by the Trump administration.
Oh, no room for fuckery there.
No room at all, because the Trump administration's going to decide, and we know how reasonable they are. So in order to obtain Title X funding, providers would have to open and operate an entirely independent facility to merely provide a referral for abortion care. These separation requirements are set to take effect in 2020. And may I just say yet again, they are absurd. They're absurd.
Can you imagine, like, the idea of, okay, we've got a clinic, and then let's say, you know, like, what would compliance look like? We've got our clinic, and so now we are opening our separate facility. So here, patient, we are going to walk next door, you know, assuming it would ever be that easy, where right. I can then go do that. Like, the added expense and hassle is just ridiculous, which is why advocates across the country sued to block the restrictions from taking effect. Yay. Good. So in the lawsuit, they made a couple arguments. First, they argued primarily that the gag rule violates Section 1554 of the Affordable Care Act. And that's the section that says the Secretary of Health and Human Services, quote, shall not promulgate any regulation that creates any unreasonable barriers to the ability of individuals to obtain appropriate medical care. That makes me a little sweaty because that sounds like administrative law.
Oh, God, here we go. They're also arguing that the rule is arbitrary and capricious. Ooh! I'm going to give space for Jess to have her little flip out now because she loves that shit. But they're saying it's arbitrary and capricious because, quote, it reverses long-standing positions of the department without proper consideration of sound medical opinions and the economic and non-economic consequences. Now, they're also arguing that the separation requirements increase expenses unnecessarily and unreasonably because, duh. I mean, if you're a clinic and you have to erect an entirely different building just to house a referral service, yeah, that's going to increase your expenses a little bit unnecessarily and a little bit unreasonably.
I do think we're at the point within the Trump administration where legal pleadings can have because, duh, in them in responding to some of this shit.
They're also arguing that not including counseling on abortion is inconsistent with ethical and evidence-based healthcare. Now, what happened next is just basically flat-out judicial chaos.
It really is. We had four different district court judges blocking the restrictions from taking effect, with two of those judges blocking it nationwide while the lawsuits proceed. But on June 20th, a three-judge panel from the Ninth Circuit granted a request from the Trump administration to stay or pause those nationwide injunctions, which would allow the gag rule to be broadly enforced. Okay, that's bad. So advocates say, hold up, that's bad, and they ask the full Ninth Circuit to reconsider. The full Ninth Circuit refused. Also bad.
Yep.
Meanwhile, the Trump administration had given providers until August 19th, so this Monday, to provide a letter or some kind of plan to say how they were going to comply with these new restrictions. Planned Parenthood and other providers said, well, this is bad, and so they asked the Ninth Circuit again for emergency relief, and the Ninth Circuit again said nope. So Planned Parenthood announced that it was leaving Title X so long as these restrictions remained in place. I mean, what can it do?
Remember when the Ninth Circuit was liberal and they did the right thing and they did good things, and now the Ninth Circuit is just shit.
I know.
It sucks. So Trump has, for the time being, gotten Planned Parenthood and a bunch of other family planning providers that offer comprehensive reproductive health care to leave the federal family planning program, which is ridiculous because how are you going to get family planning providers to leave a family planning program? Why, Jess? Why? Why? Why?
Well, good question, Imani. Why? Why does this case matter other than Planned Parenthood?
Well, aside from the effect on Planned Parenthood, it's an attack on low-income people and their access to comprehensive health care, and it's an all-out assault on contraception access. Title X serves about 4 million people, and often it serves those 4 million people as their primary source of access to health care.
It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. Approximately two-thirds of people who rely on Title X live in poverty, and Title X clinics are the main source of medical care for the 6 in 10 women who receive their care there. 60%! Now, about one-third of Title X patients are Latinx, and approximately 22% are Black. So we're talking one-third Title X are Latinx, 22% are Black, and obviously this means that a disproportionate number of Title X patients are people of color. So providers like Planned Parenthood have a choice. They can either comply with this bullshit or they can leave the program. And many have decided to leave because they want to continue to be able to provide the full panoply of services that constitute reproductive health care, which includes abortion and contraception. So those folks are going to leave. But guess who's going to stay?
Who?
Well, those providers who are not only anti-abortion, but also anti-contraception. And that's what this fight is really about.
It really is. This is a war on contraception access and one John Roberts helped make possible.
So I'm going to ask you to explain because I know you're like itching to. You're very excited. So tell us more about this.
His history is really bad, and I feel the need to evangelize about this, so I'm going to do that a little bit. It's true. So some of our listeners may recall, because I've talked about this before, but if not, if this is new information, John Roberts was once a lawyer in the George H.W. Bush administration, and while he was a lawyer in that administration, he argued that Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided and should be overturned.
So that's lovely. That bodes well for all of the abortion rights cases that are coming up next term. I mean, John Roberts is a conservative. He may be the swing vote in the court right now, but he is a conservative and he does not like Roe v. Wade. So that's fun.
Yeah, I'm gonna ease into this. He did this a couple times, but I really want to talk about this case, Rust versus Sullivan. There, Roberts was the lead government attorney defending the Reagan-era domestic gag rules. That's how long we have been fighting about the restrictions on Title X. Basically, as long as Title X has existed, Republicans have tried to screw with it. And so the Reagan administration had a gag rule, and that was being litigated when Bush was president. These are the rules that Trump just replicated, okay? So Roberts is arguing this before the Supreme Court. In that case, he wrote in the government's brief, quote, "We continue to believe that Roe was wrongly decided and should be overruled."
I mean, what the hell, man?
I just heard Imani's eyes roll.
I did. My eyes have rolled so far in the back of my head that I just may never be able to see again. I mean, it's like, this is just signaling where we're headed, right? We are just, it's just a blaring light, wee-oo, wee-oo, siren, burr, air horns, the whole thing. We're headed to a bad place, people. And John Roberts is going to just grab us by the hands and take us to the bad place. Not even the medium place.
Skipping us down the path to the bad place.
Right? Not even with like a bag of cocaine to the medium place. We're going straight to the bad place.
Oh, with that image in mind, I'm going to give you folks one more quote from Rust just to give you a sense that really when we say he's not a moderate, because you're going to hear he's a moderate at some point again on abortion, because like at one point he decided not to close the clinics in Louisiana. He's not a moderate. Here's what he wrote. "The court's conclusions in Roe that there is a fundamental right to an abortion and that the government has no compelling interest in protecting prenatal human life through pregnancy find no support in the text, structure, or history of the Constitution." Imani, did you know that? No support. None. No,
yeah, except for the fact that there is, because the court decided that there was. I mean, fine, if you don't like a decision, say you don't like a decision, but don't pretend like the people who actually issued that decision just pulled it directly out of their own asses.
Right. So with all of that context in going in to defend the constitutionality of the Reagan-era gag rule, Roberts advanced this line of logic. He said, "While under Roe, the government may not prohibit a woman from choosing to have a first trimester abortion," this is true, good job for acknowledging that, This court has repeatedly held that the government is not obligated to provide the means to exercise any such right. Thus, the government need not finance the provision of information about abortion, whether the information is provided in the form of abortion counseling, referral, or advocacy. So Roberts gets the court to buy this argument and uphold the gag rule by a 5-4 vote.
First of all, I want to address the fact that, you know what, the government actually does have an obligation to finance the provision of information about abortion to the extent that it's going to decide to finance the provision of information about healthcare. Abortion is healthcare. Motherfuckers! But aside from that...
It's the motherfuckers that really drives that home.
You know, you just gotta add that in there. What is the point of the Hyde Amendment if we're going to talk about public financing of abortion when it comes to Title X? The Hyde Amendment already makes public financing of abortion impossible. And so that is why this myth of the gag rule really being about abortion is horseshit, because it's not about abortion. It's about contraception, and it's about cementing opposition to contraception into Supreme Court jurisprudence.
Okay, that was a lot, and I agree with all of it. But
it's
also
very shouty.
I think we need to break that down, because you're going to hear that this is about abortion, but really when we're talking about these restrictions, it is about contraception. And so let's really walk that through.
All right, here we go. In 1980, in a different abortion rights case called Harris versus McRae, the Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of the Hyde Amendment and also ruled that state Medicaid programs were not obligated to pay for medically necessary abortions that Hyde had made unreimbursable. So the Hyde Amendment is a spending restriction passed by Congress that prevents federal funds, so that's Medicaid, mm-hmm. from paying for abortions. The Hyde Amendment was first passed in 1976 in direct response to Roe, and it is very clearly an attack on poor people. In fact, the dude who introduced the Hyde Amendment, good old Henry Hyde, basically said that he would love to eradicate abortion across the board, but since the only way he could do it was by attacking Medicaid, then he was going to go ahead and attack Medicaid. And if it's poor people, fuck them. Who cares?
Yeah, fuck them.
Now, Congress can repeal the Hyde Amendment at any time.
Anytime.
Anytime it wants to. It can just say, nope, we're not going to attach this stupid rider to the appropriations bill anymore. So by the time the Reagan administration is pushing this gag rule, and especially by the time John Roberts is defending that gag rule before the Supreme Court while serving in the first Bush White House, it is already established law that the government doesn't have to fund abortion services. Let me say that again. By the time the Reagan administration decided it needed a gag rule, and by the time John Roberts decided that he was going to defend the gag rule based on this idea that we don't have to publicly fund abortion, it was already banned. There is no taxpayer-funded abortion. None. Zero. Just to be clear. Now, there should be, and I will argue to my dying breath that publicly funded abortion should be a thing, but right now there is not. So that should be the end of the story. There's no funding for abortion. So what the hell is all this Title X crap all about?
Because the argument that Roberts crafts in Rust versus Sullivan to defend that Reagan-era rule extends the logic of the government doesn't have to pay for abortions to essentially the government doesn't have to facilitate abortions, right? And that should sound familiar, because that's the entire argument the Trump administration is using to attack reproductive autonomy writ large, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, we saw this in several cases. We saw it in the Garza case. We saw it in the Hobby Lobby case. This idea that, you know, insurance companies don't have to facilitate the provision of birth control in employer-based health insurance plans. Or in the Garza case, the government doesn't have to, I don't know, follow the rules of Texas, which had already decided that this young woman was entitled to an abortion, but to actually give the abortion on American soil to an undocumented immigrant, well, that was facilitating abortion, and we're just not into facilitating abortion. I mean, it doesn't even make any sense, because what the fuck does facilitate mean anyway? Is it referral? Is it thinking about? Is it a wink and a smile?
Right.
Like, it's just this very ambiguous term that the court has used to essentially strip reproductive rights and reproductive autonomy from people.
Right. So we had the hard stop in Harris versus McRae with the Hyde Amendment. And then we get Roberts to get the court to extend that logic that upheld the Hyde Amendment and endorse the Reagan era rules. And that's what we've got facing the court now with these Trump administration rules put in place.
Yeah, yeah. And just, you know, to reiterate, the fact that Roberts was arguing this in, what was it, 1991? Is that when Russ v. Sullivan was? You can be damn sure that that's when what he's going to be arguing now that he's sitting as Supreme Court Justice on the bench. It is, it's depressing.
We should mention the only reason that those rules never really substantively took effect is because we had an election that brought President Clinton and the Democrats took power.
Right. And that's something that's important, I think, to just sort of put a pin in, is the fact that these are regulations that agencies are developing. They're not statutes. They're not case law. So a Democratic president could just undo all of this, right? Yep. Like a Democratic president could say, okay, Planned Parenthood, come on back. We're going to give you the Title X funding and blah, they can do whatever they want. But, you know, aside from that, what happens next? What can we do now? What can people do now?
Sure. So let's first talk about the legal challenges, because that litigation is still going on. There are oral arguments at the end of September at the Ninth Circuit. And we have talked a lot about Russ versus Sullivan and how Roberts has airlocked a lot of these arguments. But these challenges do make some slightly different legal claims. So, you know, Goonies never say die, Imani. I'm not gonna say all hope is totally lost at the court because of some of those tweaks. We'll see what the court does. I think it's a long road ahead, but there is still the litigation process that needs to work itself out.
And there's also a political process that can work itself out, right? The House has passed a bill that would fully fund Title X without the gag rule. So now would be a fantastic time to pressure Susan Collins to get the Senate to do the same.
Ooh,
since
she's,
you know, supposedly all pro, you know, abortion rights and pro-choice and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I haven't quite seen it yet, but there's still time, Susan.
Hey, Suze.
And now some states are stepping in and providing funding where Title X is no longer an option. Places like Illinois, Maryland, Vermont, and Washington are all doing what they can to make sure that folks don't lose access to comprehensive reproductive health care. So, you know, that's a good thing, but it's also scary that we're living in these times that there's this patchwork of rights depending on what state you live in. And, you know, it's just not possible for people. I know a lot of people like to say, well, you shouldn't be living in the South or you shouldn't be living in these states. It's not possible, for people to just up and move and leave their families and jobs. And B, there are a lot of progressive people who are doing a lot of really good work in these states. So it doesn't really help them or boost their ego to hear people saying, oh, yeah, screw that state. Everyone should leave.
And Imani, I was just going to say, I yelled at you in Slack for like a full hour about this, but we have to call out the grift that the Trump administration is turning the Title X program into for anti-choice clinics, right?
Yeah.
The federal family planning program is now going to fund a whole lot of Christian and Christian adjacent clinics that offer nothing close to the full spectrum of reproductive health care. And that is in direct violation of the mission of Title X, which is expand access to healthcare. It makes me very mad.
It makes me angry. It makes me sweaty. It makes me want to, I don't know, throw a box of baby turtles in the air, but then catch them because I like baby turtles. They're cute. I will catch them. So, that's our fun and exciting and very, very happy episode for today. We apologize, but, you know, we're living in Trump's America and it's just not all going to be good news, but we're going to try and find hope where we can. If you'd like to talk to us about any of this, you can follow me on Twitter at Angry Black Lady. You can follow Jess on Twitter at Hegemommy, Hegemommy. You can follow Rewire.news at Rewire_news. And you can and should join our Facebook group because it is awesome and you will like it. And we will let you in if you answer the questions. And if you don't understand the Brad McBeer, Justice Beer Funnel, Justice Keg Stand, Chugs McCaverton, which is something that someone
Chugs
came up with. I nearly died when I saw it. She's like, I don't know, Chugs McCaverton. So those are any of the sort of funny names that we've come up with for, I don't even know his real name anymore. What's his name? Brett Kavanaugh.
Brett Kavanaugh.
Anyway, what are we going to do, Jess?
We'll see y'all on the tubes.
See y'all on the ding-dang tubes.
Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason-Piclo and Imani Gandhi. This episode was produced by Mark Folletti, who is also our executive producer. And the Rewire.news editor-in-chief is Jody Jacobson.